I can't believe this is happening again. I need to call Zara Norbosch.
Hello, this is Zara.
Zara, the thing is, I am missing my partner in crime, Carolyn. She's not going to be on the show this week.
When will she be on the show again?
She'll definitely be back next week, but this week I'm sad without her. Will you come on our show and make me laugh?
I'll be right over.
Let's do this.
Welcome to Feminist Frequency Radio. This is episode number 11, and I'm your host, Anita Sarkeesian. And I'm joined by the old warhorse, Ebony Astor.
Hey, people.
Plus, we have a very, very special guest, comic and co-host of the monthly podcast, Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, Zara Norbosch.
Hello, hello.
Did I say your name right?
Yeah.
Yes. All right. This is the show that asks you to be critical of the media you love, or alternatively, we're the feminist killjoys coming for your media, depending on your perspective. On today's show, we're going to check in with the latest pop culture news. We'll share our early thoughts on the latest superhero TV show, Black Lightning. Get into Saturday Night Live's attempts at using humor to talk about Me Too. Then, as always, we'll finish the show by each sharing a little something in What's Your Freak Out? Exclusively for our fantastic drip backers, we'll be recording a bonus segment. In this week's bonus segment, Ebony and I will be digging deeper into Zara's life and work. So if you're not a drip backer yet, why not? Go sign up now. As you've heard before, everything Feminist Frequency does, including this very podcast, is listener, reader, and fan-supported, so thank you for helping us to stay on the air and on the web. If you want to access special perks and exclusive backer rewards, go to our podcast community at d.rip/femfreak. And speaking of our podcast community, shout out to Jesse Young, who joined us in our first AMA on January 26th and was such a good sport when put on the spot as the very first person to arrive on the call. Thank you for joining us, Jesse, and everyone else who showed up to chat. If you missed the AMA, don't worry. You can check out the video over at d.rip/femfreak, and you'll also have an opportunity to take part in future AMAs. So keep an eye out for those messages from us about the next one. Now, on with the show. Zara.
What's that?
We're so excited to have you.
I'm so excited to be here.
Can you tell our either three listeners or millions of listeners, depending on the day, who you are and why you're here with us and why we like you so much?
No pressure.
Yeah.
Well, I think why you guys like me is because of what's in my soul and how we met in the stars one time.
Yes, that definitely happened.
That's not why I like you. Just kidding. That is exactly it.
Before we derail too far, you are a comedian.
I'm a comedian. I always identify myself as a feminist, Muslim, Iranian-American comedian who is also out as bisexual and married to an infidel. I feel like that just covers all the bases.
It definitely covers all the bases.
All the questions, all at once. And then we just like move on with the conversation. It's awesome.
I love it.
I don't know
it's
about
perfect.
The move on with the conversation. Married to an infidel. I feel like, okay, that's another question I have, you know, but we'll get into that in the bonus segment. So y'all really want to subscribe this week.
So the bonus segment is really going to be, let's talk about your marriage. What does it mean to
you? Oh, hot. Oh.
All right. So I got a little something I want to say just because this was hilarious to me. I was in Edmonton last week speaking at the Edmonton Public Library.
Humble brag.
And that wasn't a brag.
Leaving the house. Job. Humble brag.
Ebony does not like when I talk about leaving the house ever.
I also like that it's at the public library. But go on.
I know. Anyways, so did a talk there. There's a little meet and greet afterwards. And someone was talking to me about how they really liked the podcast. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. Thank you. Like, I still get really excited because it's so new that I get excited when people are listening to it. And I said something about this week's and how Ebony and Carolyn weren't on it. We had a special guest. And I was like, you know, and usually I listen to the podcast before it goes out, but I just didn't have time to this week. So I just trusted the team to be amazing and release a great podcast. And I was like, I wonder what Phil picked for the teaser. And she said, Ebony. And I was like, but Ebony wasn't on it. You must be thinking of the week before. And she's like, no, it was Ebony. And I was like,
What in the hell did Phil and Ebony do?
Here's what happens. Okay. So the show ends on a weekly basis. Anita and Carolyn go off to do the work that keeps Feminist Frequency afloat. And I'm like, hey, Phil, I really need to get more airtime this week. Hook me up. And Phil, because he can't say no, because he's the sweetest person, is like, all right, let me put together a real quick skit for you. You know, week on week, this is what happens.
Sensational. Yeah, and even all of the little, like, what's your freak out, what's your deal stuff, I had no idea that that was being made either. So I learned about that when the public learned about that. It was special. We love our producer, Phil.
We do.
All right, Ebony, you have the daunting role of being Carolyn this week and doing our little pop culture check-in.
Yo, this is ridiculous, y'all, how nervous I was trying to step into Carolyn's elegant, articulate shoes for this week. So cut me some slack is
you got this. We believe in you.
Okay, so imagine that I'm unrolling, like, a mile-long Egyptian scroll here, because I got several things for us to talk about, right?
All right.
And I'm really going to need y'all's support. A drum roll or something? I don't know. But I feel like there should be some... Thank you.
Right now for doing that.
He is so through with us. Okay, so first things first. Oscar nominations. The Academy Awards 2018. Let me start with a quick poll, okay? Do either of the two of you give a shit about the Academy Awards? Be honest.
Okay, I got it. My giving a shit is on a spectrum.
Okay.
So, like, I feel like it's relevant to know about it because of my job.
Right.
But if I didn't do this work, I don't think I would care.
Zara?
Yeah, it's not really relevant to my job, so I don't care.
Yeah. Oh, how I wish I were in that position. So, yeah, same. I actually have trouble. I've gone over this when we talked about the Emmys. Like, I don't like watching award shows. I find them incredibly uncomfortable. But yeah, it's important, you know, both as people who talk about the media, but also people who kind of, you know, draw the connections between, like, politics and media representations to pay attention to this shit. So I'm going to force people to think about the Oscars for, I don't know, 30 seconds. One. Or rather, the one thing that I think is so interesting is the continuing discussion about Oscar so white. So this is the hashtag that I'm hoping most people have seen or heard, started around 2015 from activist and writer April Rain. She's at April Rain on Twitter, bemoaning the sort of, you know, unsurprising lack of representation at every level in the film industry. And so as this is a conversation that continues to happen, I don't know what sort of progress people really expect. And yet we continually get these, you know, half-baked kind of analyses where it's like, oh, you know, Daniel Kaluuya got nominated. Jordan Peele got nominated. So obviously things are getting better. But I want to kind of have a conversation about this, you know, back padding tokenism, whereby if you can still count on one hand the number of people who are not straight white dudes, we're supposed to be jumping for joy at this bullshit. You know?
Yeah.
Like, haven't we moved past this point?
No.
Well, clearly, right?
I see it as very corporate.
Yeah, in what way?
I've always seen the academies as this, like, way of the studio industry saying, we're going to put our money into this actor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it sort of, like, catapults them into a new level of, like, quantity of films.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, then it rings a different kind of significance when, you know, the token issue and, like, I'm basically agreeing and adding. And also money is involved. And so that makes it even more of a slight.
Well, and people are so desperate for representation at all that, like, just getting a couple noms that aren't white dudes feels triumphant and valuable. But, like, we're so beyond that point. I think that we're so beyond that point that it should be, like, it should not be something to celebrate that, like, two black dudes are nominated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it should be so much more than that. Or, like... Yeah, so I find that really frustrating.
Yeah, and also there's this really kind of unfortunate turn whereby, you know, even though, you know, when April kind of coined this turn of phrase and, you know, it was kind of a glancing thing that took on a life of its own, and, you know, sort of escaped, I don't want to say her control, but certainly people were mischaracterizing it as this some sort of binary, as if, one, she was speaking purely about Black folks, right? But also that, you know, this was just about, like, straight folks, too. Like, this is, she's talking about things on a spectrum. So, you know, not just cisgender, you know, we need to get people who are differently abled, et cetera. So, I just, you know, as we move into further into this award season and kind of the crown jewel of the award season, just going to encourage people to think about this in a more complicated way and not just rest on our laurels. So that's all I have to say about the Oscars. And given how much the three of us care about the Oscars, it's time to move on. Speaking of award shows, did either of you watch any part of the Grammys last night?
Yeah, we watched a bit of it. I want to shout out just for the Grammys. I'm really bummed that SZA didn't win any awards, but also that, what's her name? That did Pray.
Oh my God, Kesha.
Kesha, that's right. Kesha did this really moving number that was just sensational, and I'm glad I at least caught that.
It was amazing.
Yeah, it was really emotional, and Janelle Monáe introduced it saying, talking about Me Too and Time's Up and how important that is in the music industry as well. And like, it was, nobody applauded. Like, I made a comment being like, she was like, yes, and in our industry too, we need to like fight for this. And it was just like crickets, basically, which was really sad. And then Kesha did this amazing, moving performance. And
oh, it's giving me chills just thinking about it.
Yeah.
Also, Kesha holds a special place in my heart because she's Persian.
Well, now I wish I had watched it.
I didn't know that. Yeah, it's on YouTube. It's on the internet. You can check it out.
Kesha, like, if you ever are like, what is the traditional music of Persians? It's Kesha Remix.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
I'm going to, listen, I'm going to bow out of the podcast early and go check this out because I didn't watch a Miggy Figgy minute of them shits. Like, as I approach my ninth decade on this earth, y'all, I'm listening to Nat King Cole. I really could not give less of a shit about this stuff. So bye to the Grammys. You know, if I can't, you know, sustain interest in the Oscars, I ain't gonna give a shit about the Grammys. But okay. Do we want to move on from pop culture news? Sorry, Caro, I didn't carry the torch well.
It's all good. I do want to, I know we need to move on to the main segment, but I do want to shout out that Ursula K. Le Guin died. She passed away during this last week, and she is just such an important figure in feminist science fiction. And so just like, shout out, go check out her work if you aren't familiar.
Absolutely.
Great. All right, let's move on to Black Lightning. So Black Lightning is a CW show, which means that literally everyone on the show is fucking hot as shit.
Oh my God.
It's like, it is a little distracting.
This is the kind of media criticism people come to us for.
It just, CW has that like sheen, like all of their shows have, like it's so their thing that they do. Anyways, Black Lightning is a new superhero TV show because we clearly can't have enough superhero shit right now. Ebony, this was your idea for us to talk about it, which I think was a great idea. Why don't you dive in?
Yeah. So just a quick show summary for the folks who don't know about Black Lightning. It's about Jefferson Pierce, who, and I'm cribbing this summary directly from Wikipedia. So if y'all are hardcore comics heads, and this is an inaccurate kind of, you know, thumbnail about Black Lightning, feel free to at me, at Ebony Aster, and maybe I'll respond, maybe I won't, but this is what you're getting today. So Jefferson Pierce, who retired from his superhero persona Black Lightning 9 years ago after seeing the effects it had on his family, is forced to become a vigilante again when the rise of the local gang called the 100 leads to increased crime and corruption in his community of Freeland. So as Anita said, this is part of the superhero universe on the CW, which I think they're all DC characters as opposed to the Marvel shows we're getting.
Oh, is it? I forgot to look that up.
I believe so. So we've got Arrow, The Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow. I think those are all DC properties. And I think, you know, so there's that juxtaposition, right, between those and the Marvel shows.
Yeah, for sure.
It seems to me, I could be wrong, again, I'm approaching 90, but it seems to me that the shows on the CW skew to a younger demographic, which is not to say that young folks are not loving and vibing on the Marvel shows, but it seems to me that there's more of a, you know, kind of teen appeal to the shows on the CW, which I find very interesting. But the reason I wanted to talk about this show is just all the lovely ambient blackness of this show. Okay, like there's only been two episodes so far, but I wrapped this shit around me like a warm blanket, you know? Like it was just so dope. On a weekly basis, you know, you, Carolyn, and I decide what we're going to talk about. And there are things that just don't come from my cultural wheelhouse that, you know, I kind of get into and to a, you know, greater or lesser extent, you know, feel like, oh, yeah, I'm catching those allusions. You know, I can vibe with that language, this kind of aesthetic, whatever. But to have a meta conversation, I actually, you know, struggled this week with, oh, should we talk about Black Lightning? Because I was like, I mean, not to call you out, Anita, but I was like, am I going to have to explain a bunch of references? You know, like, am I going to have to, you know, bring it's folks fair, up to speed fair. On like the phenomenal blackness of this show? And then I was like, wait, why do I have to, you know, carry that torch alone? Like, get into it. Watch this show, y'all.
Yeah. So I enjoyed it. And, like, I'm going to keep watching it. Like, it wasn't, you know, the most amazing thing ever. But, it, like, I thought it was a solid show for the most part. Mm-hmm. You know, with, you know, there's annoying exposition.
Right.
YOLO. we were laughing. Zara and I watched the last episode together. We're laughing because they were like, one of them was like, YOLO. And the other one is like, you only live once. And I was like, this is CW. You don't need to explain
for
what YOLO
real,
means.
Right? Right?
So, yeah, I actually enjoyed it. And I got to say, I think some of it was I really like Cress Williams. And I think I like him because I really like Friday Night Lights and I really like Heart of Dixie. Shut up. I like that show. Y'all
I wasn't going to say nothing.
Don't
ask
me.
I was just making this face.
Whatever. Heart of Dixie is one of my like go to like feel good shows that I know is kind of.
I can't believe I'm just learning this today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's true. Carolyn was subjected to a lot of Heart of Dixie during E3 because
oh
I was like, God. Just had it on all the time. Anyways, Cress Williams in both of those, and he's delightful in both of those shows that I like. And so I was, it gave me an in to this in a, it just from having that familiarity. But I think that they did a really lovely job of like setting up the universe without being too heavy-handed. Like, there was definitely some heavy-handed shit in it, but for
yeah, the show
most
is not
part,
subtle. The show
no,
is not subtle.
No, it's not. It's not. But it's, you know, like, I don't expect a lot from superhero shows. And also, like, I didn't like Luke Cage. I had a really hard time watching that show. And
I'm going
to
get up
like
and
it.
Walk out right the fuck
That's
now.
That's fine. I thought it just didn't do it for me in the way that, like, in Black Lightning did, right? Where I'm excited to see Black families and Black communities.
Yeah.
I did have some issues with like the narrative being about like the horrible gang.
This is one of the things that I wanted to bring up. And, you know, I'm glad you hooked me up with that smooth segue into Luke Cage, because I want to talk about how, for the most part, this is not, you know, exclusive by any means to Black superheroes. But it seems to me, as someone from the outside, when you have a Black superhero, the big bad of the show or of the film tends to be a fairly micro villain. So it's usually something like inner city violence or poverty or something, right? Which are huge things. I'm not trying to minimize that at all.
Yeah, of course.
But as if the only concerns those superheroes have, like those are their primary concerns, which is fine. But those are their only concerns. But when it comes to like fighting supernatural forces or like alien beings or whatever, that's something that's like the white hero's job. You feel me?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So like,
I couldn't put my finger on it. And that's part of it too. Right. Like that white. Yeah. 100%. But part of me also wanted more like, you know, more systemic shit here in terms of like the authoritarian power structures.
I think we're going
to
get
like,
that
oh,
though.
Like, I think so too. It's they're already talking about the cops and stuff like that, which I think is good.
Yeah.
There's
you know, so
much
like
they touch on.
Yeah, I don't mean to cut you off, but I guess I'm so excited that they have like these real conversations between, what, for lack of a better, you know, set of terms, I'm going to say bougie versus hood culture, you know, in the kind, yes, of radicalism that exists on the street, right? As represented in, like, this family itself. So you have Jefferson Pierce, who has a picture of him with Obama on his desk at work, right? Representing that kind of, like, you know, paternalistic liberalism, versus his daughter, who folks call Harriet, like, and she's the black lesbian superhero. What? Give me more.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you think? Okay. I thought that it was the best show ever made on the planet.
Hey, now. Zara, and come on now. Come on. Give it to us.
Hold on. I have a very important follow-up question.
Okay.
Is this the first show you've ever watched in your life?
I have seen a million shows, and this is the best show I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
So I'm just trying to deal with the fact that I'm in an enclosed space with Anita, who was just criticizing it just now.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. She's going to get up and walk out on me.
Good. We both.
Oh, you're
my
God.
Be finishing this podcast alone.
Like, okay, as a feminist Muslim Iranian American comedian who identifies as bisexual and is married to an infidel and has to explain that on stage in 5 minutes all of the time.
Uh-huh.
I was watching this, like, just even the pilot with, like, how are they covering so much ground?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, still putting together a plot.
Yeah.
I was impressed with that too. I felt like this show could have been so exposition heavy, and, like, there was definitely exposition in it, but I felt like I noticed the moments where they're like, oh, we have to introduce this concept, and they did it in a way that didn't annoy me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where most of the time you're like, oh, God, great, we have to just, like, get that out.
You mean, like, Star Trek Discovery?
I mean, exactly like Star Trek Discovery.
Which I also find an excellent show, but...
No, I'm joking. You don't?
No. That discredits everything that I just said previously. No. No, here's the thing is that, like, aside from just conceptually, one of the things that they're having to do, which is something that I struggle with in comedy all of the time, is, like, they have to build context and then build plot on top of it. You know what I'm saying? Mm. So it's like they have to establish an entirely new narrative and then move forward with even further complexity. So I, like, for me as a writer, I'm, like, watching this and watching them just, like, basically, like, the equivalent of, like, making balloon animals in 5 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
Or less. And just, like, here, ha-ha. And then here, ha-ha. And then this one flies, ha-ha. Rap, rap, rap. Coil, coil, coil. Look at that. It's a poodle. Boom. Like, oh, my God. You know? And then also, like, there's so much intergenerational stuff going on.
Yes.
And one of the things that I really, really connected with was, like, my father was an activist when he was a youngin'.
Mm-hmm.
When he was a youngin'. And when he saw me getting into activism, he gave me the harshest spiel that reminded me of Anise with her father. That was, like, he was like, listen, man. I don't know why my dad always calls me man. Listen, man, like, you know, you're doing all this activism. Okay, that's great. Also, one day you're going to have to get a job because you're going to have kids and you're going to have to work for the man.
I've so heard this lecture before, too.
Right? Mm-hmm. And you're going to have to retire. And who's going to give you that retirement? The man. So you can, like, go do your little, like, activism-y thing. But eventually, like, you know, and it was just like him having that conversation with her was so incredible that they packed that in. And then I think it was like in the spoiler second episode, there was this moment where I almost found them as a couple, Jeff and his ex-wife. I found them dislikable.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they were, like, so perfect,
yeah,
and saying all the right things. And it was like, oh, this is getting, like, saccharine now. And right after that scene.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
His wife's head is in the box.
Was when Rwanda got shot.
Luanda. Yeah, no, exactly, right? So you, this is what I'm talking about, like the contrast between like bougie black culture and, you know, for lack of a better word, hood black culture, you know? So like people, who, like working class folks who don't come from that like perfect nuclear family, you know, who've had, you know, different struggles or more, you know, intense struggles. The show does not shy away from giving those people screen time and giving them voice, right? And so Luanda, you know, rightfully calls Jefferson Pierce out. Like, she doesn't know he's Black Lightning, right? But she's like, well, how is it that your daughters got saved, but our daughters didn't? You know, like, let's pay attention to, you know, who is considered worthy of saving. And then for the show, again, yeah, spoilers, like when Luanda, who, by the way, I have the same track jacket she was wearing, so shout out to Target. but when she is brutally killed by Lala, there's a moment where you're just like, oh God, that voice cannot be silenced. Like what she was saying was so important. Who she represented was so important. And I think we're going to, you know, as you know, the second episode ends, we see Black Lightning be like, yeah, the way that I've been doing this, like, you know, I've been doing a great job as a principal, but there's some more like radical fighting that needs to be happening because people are getting left behind. I can't just get mine.
And also cops get tased by lightning.
Yeah.
That's kind of satisfying.
Say no more.
I do want to shout out the casting of Tobias. So Tobias is the, like, what is being set up is the main villain. And in the show, he is like albino, or I was just reading about it. It's a particular kind of disorder where there's lack of pigmentation. Hey, y'all. Welcome to Anita Fucks Up Again. I just used the word disorder to discuss a particular type of skin tone when I think that that's actually kind of fucked up because there's nothing wrong with it. So I probably should have used the word condition when I was trying to be more specific here. So apologies. I will do better next time. And they cast someone who was, he's a hip-hop artist named Marvin Crondon Jones III, who has the same disorder.
How about that name, too? Crondon.
I know.
Like, it sounds like a supervillain. Crondon.
Yeah. And he has the same disorder, and I, like, that's cool that they weren't just like, we're gonna, like, erase that out of the narrative and give folks who, like, don't always get represented who look that way a chance on camera and on film. I don't know if he has an acting background, because when I found out that he was like a hip-hop artist and not an actor, I was like, he's doing pretty good on the show.
Like, he's legitimately he's terrifying on the show. And there's some real interesting shit happening. Like, they're setting up some great conversations. You remember when Tobias is talking to Lala in his office and he says something about darkies, right? And Lala calls him out and he's like, whoa, you really do hate Black people. And then Tobias Wolf, you know, or Whale, sorry, Tobias Wolf, I think, is a writer on Law and Order. Man, I need to watch better shows. Anyway, he says some stuff like, no, I don't hate Black people, but I hate, like, no account, whatever. This sort of, like, again, just like gross kind of like stratification of like internalizing the pathology of racism, like good Black people and bad Black people, right? And how both people who are on the right side of the law, in quotation marks, and the wrong side of the law kind of uphold those systems.
I wonder how many Black folks are on the writing team. Like, there has to be a, like,
well, the two showrunners, the Akils, Mara Brock Akil and Salim Akil, both Black. It shows, right?
Clearly.
Like, the touches of Blackness are not touches. It's woven through the show.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So the last thing I want to call out is the music. The music is really good on the show.
Yeah.
But there's two moments that actually made me laugh that I was like, what in the fuck? So there's a scene where I cannot deal with the fact that his name is Jeff. Every time they say Jeff, I'm like pulled out of the narrative. Like, Jefferson is good. I'm down with Jefferson, but like, what up, Jeff? No.
Yeah.
Anyways, there's a scene where he's running. I think it's with his daughters, and Gray Hoodies by Sampha. The song is called Blood on Me. It's by Sampha. That album is amazing. I highly recommend listening to it. But it's this weird moment where he's wearing a gray hoodie and the song is like, the line in the song is Gray Hoodies. And I'm like, wait, why are you being so literal? This is weird. And the tone of it is really weird. But then So I made a note of it because I was excited that an artist that I liked was on there. But then it happened again. So there's a song, I think that this is the song called Let's Straighten It Out by B.B. Mm-hmm. King. Mm-hmm. And so when Lala is killing what's his face, the kid that caused
Willie?
The problems to begin with, so the song is called Straighten It Out. And so as the lyric of Straighten It Out is happening, Lala says, I'll straighten out. Like, I'll straighten it out.
Yeah.
And I was like, so I'm like, do I like this or hate this? I can't tell.
No, like, I love it. I love it because you're exactly right. Like, this, as we said, this show is not subtle. And to be fair, we've only had two episodes. So there's quite a bit of, you know, world building and tone setting that has to happen in those first two episodes. But you're exactly right. Like, if someone says a change is going to come, then the song A Change is Going to Come is going to play on the soundtrack.
It's so literal, man. It's hilarious. So, yeah, there's only two episodes out at the moment. And you can check them out on CW. We streamed them on their app for free with like 500,000 ads, which is a whole nother topic of conversation. But yeah, I think that we've got like thumbs up for this. Like,
yeah, and Jill
out.
Scott is
gonna
be in the next episode. Jill
what?
Scott. Yeah. As a super villain. Y'all come on. Come
what?
On.
Okay.
Get into the show.
Definitely. I was already gonna keep watching it. Now I'm just like, okay, yeah, everyone needs to watch this.
Oh, I have one final exciting call out for it.
Sure.
Before we close it out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Also, I really appreciated their callback to the show Bewitched.
When?
Wait, what?
Because the ex-wife is like a total Darren Stevens.
Huh.
She's like, don't use your magical powers.
Oh my gosh.
That is so funny.
Be the husband.
Yes.
Stay home. Stop cooking with magic.
Oh my God.
Stop it.
Oh my God. Zara, you have to be on every week because I would not have pulled that out.
I mean, even when you said it, we were both like, wait, what?
Yeah, but it always really made me crazy. And like, crazy is not the word I want to use. It always made me so enraged every time in Bewitched, like Darren Stevens was like, stop it. Stop using magic. And then I love that she was there saying that narrative and he was like, it's a gift. And I was like, yes.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Also, shout out to that actor. I think her name is Christine Adams. She was in a very good episode of Doctor Who. Okay, moving on.
Thank you, Evie. Mm-hmm. So the next segment this week, you know, we were sort of throwing things around. We're like, do we talk about the Grammys or not? But having Zara on, who is in the world of comedy, we thought it would be nice to do something with comedy. And Ebony, who is on top of everything this week, apparently.
Yes.
Saw that SNL, because who the fuck watches SNL anymore? But that they did a couple of Me Too skits last week or this Saturday with Will Ferrell. And so we watched them, and they were rough. Yeah, Zara's making some faces right now.
Yeah, we're
going
to have to get some screenshots up of the reactions. That was a choice.
So there were three skits that specifically kind of addressed or were like tangentially addressing the Me Too and Time's Up. And, you know, I think that there is a room for a conversation here around, like, how do we use humor mm-hmm. to talk about these things and when is it appropriate and when is it... Well, that's not the question I want to ask. They fucked up. So, like, maybe we should just talk about how they fucked up and how humor was not used appropriately here.
Well, I actually want to offer another inroad.
Please.
So I think one of the things that people forget about comedy is that, like, comedy is a way of coping. And so I think one of the things that's really key as we, like, you know, enter into this world where so many different voices are able to be heard, you know, or when a joke lands in our laps. You know, it didn't used to be that way, right? Like, you would hear something on The Tonight Show and then, like, maybe you would complain about it to your boss, but, like, you didn't have Twitter and Facebook
right.
and,
yeah.
you know, all these different forums to, like, speak your mind about it or Jezebel to, like, write about it or et cetera. So one of the things that I think SNL is going to continue to struggle with is that, like, it's very much a platform and a forum for white liberals to cope with the news.
Yeah.
And so that's the take we're going to get. And so then in that regard, for me, it's like nauseating and hard to sort of like see the news digested. And then I kind of watch SNL to see like, well, where's the public consciousness at when it comes to white liberals' takeaways on what's going on and when the takeaway is... Me Too's really hard.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Like, that's where we end up.
why can't I talk about this?
Why can't I have an opinion without getting in trouble for it?
Careful.
Exactly.
Careful.
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 Yeah. It was excruciating to watch. So, okay, the clip that we are talking about is a bunch of there was one dude of color and the rest of them were white, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
They were all being white liberals, though. Like, that was kind of like that was they were being like middle class liberal, like capital L liberals, sitting around the table. And someone's like, hey, did you read that article about Aziz Ansari? And then it like then they do this skit where nobody can say what they think or have opinions. And everyone is like really hedging and trying not to say like what they think or say anything about it. And everyone at the table is saying like, as soon as they go into a territory that is opinion, someone yells, careful, be careful. Right.
Yeah.
Like it was excruciating to watch.
Yeah. And
yeah,
I see.
And
what,
then, oh, go ahead.
I was just, I see what they were trying to do, but when you conflate actual, like legitimate critiques of the system and of abuse with, you know, kind of jokey critiques, then everything kind of gets flattened, right? And yeah, it does matter that when Kenan Thompson, you know, as the lone, you know, black person at that dinner table says like, all right, and let's not forget, you know, the intersection. And then this table of white folks are like, careful, careful. And I'm like, that's not the same kind
yeah.
of, like,
yeah.
that's legit. That's real. That's
totally.
Not, that's not funny. And it would have played completely differently if, you know, it had been a table full of like black folks, right? You know, like black women or brown women or whatever, like a mixed ethnic group. Like it would have just read entirely differently than the way that it did land, which was, oh, you know, first of all, I regret and I resent the fact that I need to have an opinion about this. Like it starts there, right? Like, yeah. Why do we even have to talk about this? But I guess I have to have an opinion. And then this kind of milquetoast, you know, I need to come up with the most banal vanilla pudding flavored opinion that can't get me into trouble. No, get your ass into trouble. You know, shout out yeah. what needs to be said.
And then there was a line at the end where it said, they said, let's talk about something less controversial. The Shape of Water had problems, right? And then everyone was like, no, careful.
Yeah.
And I'm like, because that's equivalent?
Yeah.
Like they created this total false equivalency. And you're right. Like there was such an opportunity to do something better, especially with the line, which I spaced on that you just talked about, where he was like, and let's not forget about race.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like that all of these things are, it's that old adage about like, you don't talk about politics or money in front mm-hmm. of mixed company or whatever, right? Like it's that like really old school thinking that they pulled out here.
That's why I felt like the sketch encapsulated itself really well in this meta way, because it mm-hmm. was, the question was raised by the white girl at the table who was like, I just want to talk about. And then all of a sudden, right, with her like sweet disposition
yeah.
and like well-meaning nature. And then so then in my mind, I was like, okay, the white feminist speaks. Let's hear what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then she just exits the conversation with witch magic.
Yeah.
yeah. And it's just like out.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, yeah, okay, that sounds about right. Like you just enter, you just like throw out there, you know, let's march with pussy hats. And then when it's like, and like also we have to take action and like call our congressman and show up to protest and put our bodies on the line. And she's like, I'm opening my book of witch magic and I'm gone.
Yeah.
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 Retweet, favorite, and support.
Like and subscribe. I was so annoyed at the whole fucking thing. There was another, that was, I think, the worst offender of mm-hmm. them all in terms of just being, like, deliberately evasive.
Yeah.
But there was a deodorant commercial called Next, and the whole shtick was that, like, men are really sweating. They're really sweating it right now.
yeah.
And that... when, like, if you use Next deodorant, when you're the next one and when the rumors come out about you, this will give you protection.
Right? Yeah,
and
I think,
so, like,
feminists get this rap for being humorless, right? And to be fair, I am humorless, so I'll take that criticism.
That is such a
but,
lie.
Yeah, but the problem is not that we don't find things funny, is that that was just an easy joke. I mean, I laughed. I shouldn't say I laughed. I maybe giggled. I smiled with half my mouth. But but again, you know, like this, the sketch is, is making fun of something that's very easy. It's very low-hanging fruit. And again, it does this thing where it centers men, right? So it's like, oh, ha, 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 you know, men are nervous. But it's like, in this conversation, even with the jokes, can we not talk about how women might feel and how uncomfortable they might feel? Like, there's comedy material to be, you know, unfurled here. Do some work, y'all.
I'm going to, like, add a little support also to what you just said with some add-ons. Because, like, number one, like, we've been laughing this entire time. We've been cracking each other up, right? So, like, clearly we have senses of humor. And one of the things that is true universally for comedy is there are the two C's that will always kill a joke. Confusion and concern. And, you know, and doing stand-up, you know, like, the guy comics would always like school me, you know, saying like, oh, if they're worried about you, then that's not going to make the joke land. But then when it's the other way and it's flipped and we're like, hey, actually, I'm worried about people when you like say that joke, then it's like, shut up. You're being too sensitive. Stop it. Yeah. Get over it. Yeah. You know, so to me, it's not so much low hanging fruit. It's more that like it's a concern to me that like you just took the sort of like nearest I don't know. You just like reached for what is the most available to you in terms of critique in your cultural consciousness. Did no other work to understand this.
Right.
And we're like, here it is on a major network television show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I have to go and take a night class on feminism and intersectionality to write like a Hillary Clinton joke.
right.
And then these dudes can just be like, I'm sweating, deodorant, ha 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 ha, like, yeah. And loads of money.
Oh, totally. And like, to that was actually really informative, so
yeah,
thank you for teaching us about comedy.
Shout out to Ebony for making sure we got Zara on this week, huh?
It was, yep,
yeah,
thanks.
Give it up, absolutely. Audience, give it up,
absolutely. I think that, Ebony, you're talking about, like, none of these skits centered women, right? Mm-hmm. This is an issue about women and the abuse of women and women's voices being shouted out. And none of these skits addressed or showed or did anything with that.
It was all, like, poor men.
Yeah, and so the last skit was, you know, like, an old
like those Time Life commercials about like record compilations, music compilations.
Yeah, and so it was like this old like sort of 50s style Chuck E. Lee Bird, and every song was about like a younger and younger underage girl. So it started with like, she's my little beauty queen, she's only 17, and then like, what should I get for my sweet 16 or for her sweet 16, and then like, the farmer girl, she's only 14. And like, so it just kept going. And so it's fucking horrifying. And you see, so there's a, you know, the host that's being like, buy this compilation is a man and a woman. And the woman is saying, like, is actively horrified by what's going on. But I also didn't feel like it was enough. Mm. Right? Like her being like, oh God, what's happening here? Cut back to us real quick.
Yeah, because like, it's truly horrifying, right? Like we see Kate McKinnon's dawning horror as she listens to the lyrics. And we even like, it gets rough because it goes, you know, as you say, 17, 16,
it goes 15, down to 12. 14.
It goes down to 11. There's one and one makes 11, right?
Oh, that's so, right.
You know, so it's fucking horrifying. And so you see her dawning horror, but as an audience member, as a viewer, we're supposed to watch this and want the joke to keep going, right? So we're not supposed to match her emotional moment. You know, we're supposed to laugh uncomfortably at it, but we want them to continue mining this for jokes. And it's like, like you've passed the point where I feel okay watching this. I mean, it started off dicey as fuck, and I actually liked it. Like, hey, you know, let's pay attention to the kind of cultural artifacts that we hold up and maybe don't interrogate. But then it got to the point where I was like, no, I'm not cool with this.
Yeah,
and maybe they could have found a way to do it, but you know, the folks who are in the writer's room at SNL, I don't know that they're competent to pull it off.
Yeah, the entire premise of the skit was pedophilia is so silly.
Mm-hmm.
That was the premise. It's so silly.
Well, yeah, and it's also like, you know, they even said, I just thought it was a different time back then. And then it was, the joke was like, it was the 80s.
Yeah.
But that they're really, you know, like, they're just trying to get laughs, but it really was there are songs like that that we listen to on the radio today that are like classics that you're like, oh my God, have you actually listened to the lyrics?
Right.
Because that's horrifying, right? So, like, I get that they're trying to be like, it was different back then, especially because that's a lot of what's been coming out of Me Too. So the cases that have been that are coming out from the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, not just the contemporary ones, the men are being like, but it was different back then.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as if, like, right, whatever. Sorry, I was about to go on a tirade about that. But that's what they're trying to do here, is they're trying to make a comment about how, like, it doesn't make it any better and it doesn't make it okay that it happened. But they fucking failed at getting that across, right? Like, is it enough to just be like, ooh, while watching the skit? I don't, is that...
Yeah, I think you're dead on, because one of the notes that I took watching it was, you know, the one thing that I'll throw them a bone for is they are normalizing the experience of tension in a conversation. Okay.
Yeah.
Yay.
Which they
Yay.
Couldn't, yeah.
Yay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good job. Yeah. Good job. Good job.
Yeah.
And,
God.
I'm going to throw him his bone. Thanks, Zara. So it doesn't end on me and Anita just hating, which is our brand. Straight up haterade.
Well, I do have one like final critique to like wrap it all around.
Yeah.
I found it interesting that the show is prepared to say that it is absolutely wrong, that pedophilia is wrong, that teenage girls are children, that they're kids,
which mm-hmm. should not be a controversial statement,
right? That like where the show's feminism is at is we can stand by this statement and not question it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like it's about music from the past. It's not even about music in the present, right? And it's like we're prepared to make that commentary, but we're not prepared to think about the complications of race in feminism when it's about a brown man and how brown women are always having to uphold their men.
Yeah.
We're not prepared to have that conversation at all.
Mm-hmm.
We're just gonna we're gonna show a bunch of bison running and equate it to that experience.
Yeah.
I found that interesting.
Yeah, totally.
And by that, I mean, I'm really smart and SNL should hire me to consult.
Yo, Lorne Michaels, hire Zara.
That's all I'm saying.
Lorne, if you're listening, if you're one of our three listeners, Lorne Michaels, hire Zara.
I feel like that would be a waste of your skills, to be honest. I'd like you to work for something equally as prestigious, but awesome.
I don't want you to move to New York.
Aw.
I just got you in L.A.
Oh, that's true. That's true. In my mind, I'm looking at a $50 million contract, so I'm like saying peace out to all of you.
But, yeah, dream on, Dreamweaver. they ain't trying to give no brown woman $50 million to write a comedy show. Monique can't even get a smooth $1 million on Netflix. So they're trying to give no $50 million.
So we will link the sketches in the info if you want to check them out, but be adequately prepared that they are horrifying and awful. Moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Ebony.
Anita.
What's your freak out?
Ooh, I can't wait to tell you. So my freak out this week is I just learned that Tana Reeve Du and her husband, Stephen Barnes, who are both amazing writers, their class on Get Out and Black Horror is being offered again, and it's being offered as a webinar, so anyone can take
what?
It. You don't have to be a UCLA student to take it. I will absolutely drop this link in the info box, because the ways in which Tana Reeve and her husband, Steve, why am I calling it like I know them personally? All right, Du and Barnes, the way they kind of talk about, you know, the body as a site of trauma, about, you know, America's original sin of slavery, about Black horror in literature and film, like, it's just so compelling. I've been following along with Du as, you know, as she tweets about it and posts stuff on Instagram. I'm sure a lot of people heard about it when Jordan Peele, the director and writer of Get Out, actually made a surprise appearance in the class the last time she hosted it. But so, yeah, it's now available to take as a webinar. And I want to say it's something like $350, which is amazing for what you get, because you actually get two classes, one on Black horror, but also another course on dynamic screenwriting. And you just have these two wonderful, scholarly, evocative writers guiding you through these topics. So I'm super excited. The class started, I want to say, a week ago, but you can catch up with video replays and then continue on with the course. And I'm just like, oh my God, I can't even tell you how excited I am for this. Like,
that sounds amazing.
Right? Right?
Nice, yeah.
And I'm glad you agree, because I'm a, you know, ask FemFreak to reimburse me for my for my continuing education. So listeners, you heard it here first.
Yeah, for real. I'm like, I want to take that. Shit.
You can just read my notes. We can't afford two people taking it.
I don't trust
it.
Your notes. I don't trust them.
Okay, you know what, Anita? Have a little faith in me.
Hey, Zara.
What's up?
What's your freak out this week?
Oh, okay. I couldn't decide.
All right. Well, you're going to have to.
All right. I'm going to go with Jaws.
Great. Do it. So, okay. Zara has two really good freakouts this week. So the other one, if you would like to say, like, the 2 second pitch of it, we will have you talk about it in the bonus segment. How about that?
I performed at the Moth in Arizona with 1,500 people in the audience, which I'm pretty sure was like all of the liberals of the state of Arizona.
Yeah.
All right. So we will talk about that in the bonus segment.
Yeah, we got to
look
back to that.
Okay. So you want to talk about Jaws.
Jaws, because, you know, we were just looking at the sketch that was like a throwback to like stuff that doesn't hold up and is problematic. I just want to like give a shout out to the movie Jaws, which is actually about intersectional feminism, and it totally holds up.
Oh, you are going to have to give us so much more.
Yeah, a little bit more. Yeah. Because now I'm freaking out on your freak out. Please walk me through.
This is going to be hard because, you know, like, I do need to do, like, basically a riff track of the film. So, like, we have to set a future date for that.
Uh-huh. But a riff tracks with Zara for Jaws? Take my money.
That would be delightful.
Take my money. Let me rent out a theater for
Patreon.
This. Right?
Yes. Okay. The shark represents patriarchy and white supremacy.
Okay.
Boom.
The water represents the public consciousness in a world immersed in patriarchy and, you know, the hegemonic white supremacy.
Okay.
Right? And like, I feel like the rest speaks for itself.
wouldn't the water be white supremacy and patriarchy? Because that's like you're living in it.
Well, it represends the subconscious, and the shark is living in it. Right,
that's but then we would be the shark. I'm sorry. I'm blowing up.
No, that doesn't make sense. No.
Well, because we are the fish in water that doesn't know that we're in water.
No, it's your subconscious.
Oh my God. Okay.
Wait a minute.
You have to. You have to be in on Jungian psychology here.
Fair. Let me go do some reading real quick.
Yeah, I know, right? I'm like, I'm not even smart enough
That's like a Wikipedia. That's like so. Okay, basically, like the water represents the subconscious. Right?
Yeah.
So then, like, everything that's in the water is what's in our subconscious that we're not dealing with.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I can see that.
Does that make more sense? So then Jaws is the patriarchy and white supremacy that we're not dealing with in this little town that's islanded itself off, that thinks it doesn't have to deal with that shit. And then it does.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then where does Roy Schneider fit in? Like, what does he represent?
Roy Schneider represents the well-meaning man, father, somewhat conscious, right? Has a wife, understands how white supremacy and patriarchy directly impact his family. But at the end of the movie, he pulls a man venture move. I call it man venture. Shoots the shark in the mouth with a rifle. There, you son of a bitch. And he like blows it up. Smile, you son of a bitch. That's his line. And he blows it up. And then what does he do? He paddles back in the water. Doesn't really get it. He doesn't really get it. It's not about just blowing it up, right? It's not about just blowing it up. And then what do we have? We have a Jaws 2. We have a Jaws 3. It doesn't end.
Yeah, the threat has not been eliminated.
Until
Jaws's wife and children start chasing his family around the world. Like, that legitimately happens.
To film about intersectional
feminism. Subsequent
feminism.
Installments. Well, you have blown my mind.
It's good. That's a good one.
Yeah.
You know, if you would like to write a piece for the feministfrequency.com website.
Oh, hey.
About that.
All right.
We could do it.
And then a riff tracks.
Yeah, riff tracks.
Yo, the servers cannot even handle it.
You said it here, so that means that we get it.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
All right. So when I'm on planes, I tend to just watch shitty things that I don't want to watch. And it's funny that you mentioned Jaws, because I watched a documentary about film, which was called Score, which is actually really interesting. So like, learning about sort of the history of film, blah, blah, blah. They mentioned Jaws because John Williams is such a huge composer of music, and he brought back like orchestral film scores. Anyways, Jaws was obviously mentioned.
Yay.
That's not what I'm going to talk about, though. I'm going to talk about Atomic Blonde. So I remember at E3 last year, Atomic Blonde was pushed really hard. And I was like, why is this being pushed really hard at a video game convention? And it's also, I refused to go see. I had no interest in going to see it because it looks like the type of film that I hate, where it's the quote unquote strong female character that like kicks ass, but is also sexy and is like everything that I don't want women's representation, like heroic women's representations in film to be. And I was right. So when I saw it playing...
Do you want me to sing the I'm Right theme song right here?
Please do. Do it.
I was right.
This happens right. A lot on the Star Trek Discovery podcast, because Ebony's right a lot. So anyways, I was like, oh, it's on this flight and I'm tired, so I'm just going to watch it because I'd like to know... I don't want to spend my life doing it, but your life on a plane doesn't count as real life. So that's when I watched the shit. It was awful. And so I have to say, okay, there's a couple of things. One, this is a minor thing, but it was, so this isn't even like representation stuff. This is just me being an asshole, but it felt like a movie made in 2017 that's supposed to take place in the 80s. It does not feel like a movie in the 80s, right? And that shit bugs me when you're trying to be serious about it. Uh-huh. So like, shout out, I love Dirty Dancing more than anything. It's my favorite film in the whole world. That is a movie that takes place in the 60s, but is an 80s movie through and through in every conceivable way. I did not understand as a child that it didn't take place in the 80s. Okay? So the whole abortion stuff went over my head when I was like 5, because I didn't even know what that meant. And why I was watching this movie when I was 5,
that was,
I don't fucking know.
That was going to be my question.
Yeah, you can blame my mom for that. But anyway, so that bothered me. And so like the music in it, which was a huge part of it, just felt so over the top and like just not, it didn't fit with the movie as much as it was like, here are songs that you know and feel nostalgia for. Here's the same song that we just played, but a different cover of it. Isn't that interesting? So all that shit bothered me. But really, I feel like, so I'm going to say this. Charlize Theron just bugs me as an actor in, like, every way. And I think that she, one, has permanent duck face, which I don't understand why. But, I like, when I go through the list of movies I've seen with her, she plays the same character. I feel like she's very one note in that, like, she gets cast as these, like, tough, strong female characters, but she doesn't have any depth to her. And that is the thing that bothers me the most with this kind of characterization. So, like... She can fight and she's smart and she's like stoic because she's like a dude, right? And she does like she can do all of the actiony things that dudes do, but like she's really hot. And so not only was it all that, then you have like a lesbian scene where like they're both really hot and naked and like of course they're hooking up because that's like, that was one of my things about Black Lightning, is I was like, oh, you're showing lesbians that are both, like, palatable to a male audience, right? That these are women that are, like, stereotypically femme and that, like, look attractive enough that it's not going to be off-putting to a male viewer. So this movie very much does that same thing where it's, like, it's super porny, right? Like, it's just, like, look at these hot chicks, like, naked in bed. Isn't that cool? And I'm just like, oh, give me a fucking break. So whatever. I did not like that movie, and I expected to not like it. But here is my Anita watches shitty movies on a plane occasional segment. All right. That's our show.
Can you redo that? I want you to be excited, not just like resigned.
I was not actually defeated. Just trying to find the script. I was like, what am I trying to say?
That's our show.
Well, you know, it wasn't a high point to end on, but I did talk about a positive thing last week. So, you know, in my freak out deal.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's our show. You can catch us back here every single Wednesday. How's that, Ebony?
Good. I will allow it to pass.
I'd like to shout out our amazing, generous Feminist Frequency Radio backers. Drip is Kickstarter's brand new subscription-based crowdfunding platform. Help us keep bringing this podcast to you every week by joining the Feminist Frequency community. We've got some great rewards, like bonus segments with special guests.
Hey!
Pitch in now at d.rip/femfree. If you are enjoying the show, we have a small favor to ask. Please leave us a review on iTunes or anywhere that you get your podcasts, because it really helps us spread the word about our show. And, you know, tell all of your friends. So maybe this week you're at a comedy club and everything's going good and everyone's laughing. And then you just lean over and you're like, hey, I heard this new podcast, Feminist Frequency Radio, is really good. And they have comedians on sometimes and they're funny sometimes. So, like, check it out. We also
check it out.
That's exactly what they would say.
That is a ringing endorsement.
We want to hear from you, so hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Anita Sarkeesian. Ebony?
I am at Get Out.
Alternatively, at Ebony Astor. And Zara, where can we find out more information about you, your work, and can we tweet at you if we want
yes,
to?
Yes, tweet at me, at Zara, Z-A-H-R-A, comedy.
Yeah,
Zara great. Comedy. You can find me there.
Perfect.
And tell me what you think.
Yeah.
And I'll take it personally.
Good. Because that's exactly what you should do with the internet.
Right,
it's really good for your mental health. Our producer is Phil Circus, who also composed our theme music. We'll see you all next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, suckers.